This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
It feels like we're all being told to go on this diet, take that supplement. Ozempic will give you depression, but you know what'll cure that? Weed. Or you could try to balance your hormones. At Science Versus, we're like,
what the f*** is going on?
Forget the crap online and listen to Science Versus. Just the facts. Oh, and a bunch of stupid jokes.
What is a ghost's favorite fruit? Booberries.
That's Science VS. New season out on Spotify soon.
This episode features discussion of abduction and torture that some people may find offensive. Listener discretion is advised, especially for children under 13.
Buck Sergeant James Norton shielded his eyes from the bright flashes of gunfire exploding along the shooting range.
Norton was overseeing his troops as they tested the Army's new Joint Attack Weapon System, or JAWS. Infantrymen were advancing cautiously along the range while Air Force helicopters swooped overhead, providing air cover to the men below.
Barely a few minutes into the weapons test, startled shouts rose above the gunfire from the far end of the range.
Suddenly, lasers crisscrossed the night sky, leaving smoking holes where they hit the ground. This was not part of the test. Norton saw soldiers jump out of the way, throwing themselves down to avoid the attack from the sky.
A military helicopter appeared. Norton yelled for his men to take cover, desperate to get them out of harm's way. That was when Norton saw it.
A large, triangle-shaped ship was floating in the night sky. As Norton watched, it made a beeline for the range.
This was no army plane. Something of that size, moving that silently and firing those weapons? He knew that this was a spacecraft from another world.
Are we alone? Have we been alone? Will we be alone? Stories of alien visitation have been ingrained in human history. Alien life may not be confirmed, but our obsession with it can't be ignored.
Welcome to Extraterrestrial, a Parcast original. I'm Tim.
And I'm Bill. Every Tuesday, we visit the marvelous and strange stories about our encounters with beings from another world.
We're aware that some of these tales may seem completely unbelievable. Others may seem all too real. But these stories shed light on human nature, human beliefs, and human psychology. And each story has garnered hundreds, if not millions, of true believers.
And for that reason, we think they're worth exploring.
Last week, we detailed the story of former United States Army infantryman John Vasquez, who claimed he was abducted by aliens at Fort Benning, Georgia in 1977.
This week, we'll learn the story of Command Sergeant Major James Norton. He was the only other member of the Army stationed at Fort Benning to also claim that there was an alien attack at the base. We'll compare his account to John Vasquez's to determine if they hold up. We'll also discuss some alternative theories as to what could have happened to these two men in 1977.
At Parcast, we are grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network.
And if you enjoyed today's episode, the best way to help is to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. It really does help. We also now have merchandise. Head to parcast.com/merch for more information. Though John Vasquez claimed to have been abducted in September 1977, he also claimed that he had no memory of the abduction until he underwent hypnosis regression therapy in 1989.
But by the end of 1989, with his memories now fully recalled, Vasquez set up camp at his typewriter. He was a man possessed, writing letter after letter to anywhere he could think of, including the Library of Columbus, Georgia, the National Personnel Records Center, and the office of House Representative Duke Cunningham from California's 50th Congressional District.
Vasquez spent 11 years tracking down and following up on hundreds of government documents. He believed that the evidence he needed to prove his story lied within these pages.
Early in his search, Vasquez received 2 articles in the mail sent by the Columbus Ledger Inquirer, the local newspaper that covered stories relating to Fort Benning. One article was about the Joint Attack Weapons Test, or JAWS test, that occurred at Fort Benning in September 1977. The other was about an outbreak of German measles at the base around the same time.
The first article from September 25th, 1977, described the JAWS test as a, quote, joint Army and Air Force effort to perfect what the Army calls close air support, a low-flying air attack which can bomb enemy vehicles, end quote. It went on to describe how the weapons system, combining infantry, helicopters, and small planes, was tested throughout the month at Fort Benning.
And that was certainly odd, because John Vasquez didn't remember any JAWS test taking place at Fort Benning.
Puzzled, Vasquez began to dig deeper into the JAWS test. It was possible that he simply just didn't remember it. Or more disturbingly, perhaps the JAWS test was just the Army's way of covering up what had really happened.
Vasquez wrote a letter regarding the article to Army Intelligence based out of Fort Meade, Maryland. When he finally received a response, it was shocking.
Army Intelligence had no record of the JAWS test. They also didn't have any record of the measles outbreak mentioned in the second article.
There are a few possibilities for why Army Intelligence did not have this intel. The articles themselves could have simply been erroneous. No other publication besides the Columbia Ledger Inquirer reported on the tests, so it's impossible to verify the articles against other reports. The record could also have simply been misplaced.
The alternative was much more unsettling. If the articles were accurate, then a JAWS test did happen at Fort Benning. If that was the case, why would the Army have no record of this groundbreaking weapons test that they themselves were participants in? And why did Vasquez not remember it?
Perhaps the story fed to the reporter who wrote the article was planted by the Army higher-ups at Fort Benning. If that was the case, and the JAWS test was a fake story, what was the Army trying to hide?
When Vasquez reached out to the Air Force, however, they sent Vasquez a 36-page document stating that the Joint Attack Weapons Test, including both the Army and Air Force, occurred at Fort Benning, Georgia in September 1977.
But rather than temper Vasquez's alien enthusiasm, this inconsistency between Army and Air Force records led him to believe even more in a cover-up of the supposed alien encounter.
At this point, Vasquez had been primarily focused on the article detailing the JAWS test, but there was also the second article to consider, the one suggesting that there had been a German measles outbreak at Fort Benning on September 21, 1977.
An interesting detail noted in the article was that those affected were all infantrymen from the same company of the 1st Advanced Infantry Training Battalion. Vasquez's group, Delta Company, was one of the companies in the 1st Battalion.
The afflicted soldiers were reported to have fever, swelling, and the telltale rash that indicate German measles. The disease, also known as rubella, is an easily treated affliction, one which the United States began vaccinating for in 1969.
Vasquez, looking for more proof of a cover-up, sent out a flurry of letters regarding the outbreak. What he received was a whole bushel of nothing.
The National Personnel Records Center, the repository for all United States military records, swore there were no files regarding the measles outbreak, not even classified ones. The Columbus Health Department had no record of the epidemic either, nor did Army Intel at Fort Meade, Maryland, nor the Surgeon General's office.
There was also no record of the outbreak at the Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. However, that facility did have records from Fort Benning that contained one curious detail. All new recruits at Fort Benning in 1977 had been immunized.
If they were immunized, why were they getting the disease? Vasquez was sure this was further proof of a cover-up. He theorized that the measles story was used to explain soldiers being brought in with fevers, disorientation, and burn marks on their bodies, symptoms that were, in reality, the result of alien abduction.
But why would the hospital staff, trained doctors and nurses, go along with the lie? Vasquez believed he found his answer in the Columbus Ledger-Inquirer article.
Colonel Anton Hitzelberger, the head of Martin Army Hospital, was quoted as saying, "We feel like the measles came in with the soldiers from the other post and is pretty much burned out. Hopefully, we won't have any more problems."
To Vasquez, this was more proof of a cover-up. It wasn't a doctor or nurse that was talking to the press. This was an Army colonel giving out information about the affected troops. Clearly, the colonel wished to control the narrative of the story, rather than permitting comments from the medical professionals at the base.
Furthermore, if there had been a real epidemic, shouldn't Colonel Hitzelberger have reported it to a military organization or agency and not just the local paper?
Vasquez knew he had to escalate the issue. When he dropped a letter to the Pentagon into his mailbox, he fantasized about receiving a confirmation of what he knew, that he and his fellow soldiers had been kidnapped by aliens in 1977.
When he received the Pentagon's answer, however, Vasquez's hopes were dashed. The information inside the envelope made him truly question his own memory for the first time. The Pentagon had no record of there ever being a JAWS test or a German measles outbreak at Fort Benning. What's more, they had no record of Vasquez himself. According to the Pentagon, John Vasquez had never been stationed at Fort Benning.
Vasquez knew this couldn't be true. From the moment he began his hypnosis treatments, he knew that he was rediscovering something incredible and horrifying that had happened to him.
Vasquez tried to reassure himself. After all, he still had his own personal medical records and honorable discharge paperwork saying that he was stationed at Fort Benning in 1977.
Vasquez began to think that the Pentagon's records may not have been missing at all. Someone in the government was deliberately hiding them. They never wanted the general public to know that an alien attack occurred on American soil.
By hiding Vasquez's records, someone was seeking to discredit him and his story. They would stop at nothing to quash the slightest rumor of extraterrestrials.
And so, he decided to be as vocal as possible. In 2000, John published a book that detailed his story and included the documents he had collected, bringing what he believed was the truth about Fort Benning to the world.
Over the next few years, his story became very well known in ufologist circles.
And as a result, in 2011, a second individual from Fort Benning came forward to also claim that the soldiers at the base had been the victims of an alien attack. While one witness may have been easy to silence, it would be much, much harder to discredit two.
We'll continue with a second Fort Benning witnesses account after this.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
Now, back to the story.
In September 1977, infantryman John Vasquez believed he experienced an alien abduction while serving at Fort Benning, Georgia. In 2000, he released a book detailing his experience. In 2011, another soldier from the base came forward for the first time.
The new witness was James Norton, now a command sergeant major at Fort McClellan, Alabama. He heard about Vasquez's story and reached out to a number of blogs and publications with his own recollection.
It's not known if John Vasquez ever publicly mentioned Norton. He seemingly never answered questions about him or gave a reaction to Norton's story, positive or negative.
James Norton was a newly promoted sergeant at Fort Benning when he claimed to witness alien contact on September 14, 1977.
Norton's account differs from Vasquez's. According to him, there was, in fact, a JAWS test at Fort Benning. He remembered being called to the firing range with his men that night. The infantrymen had all been briefed previously about the exercise they were to perform, a series of practice maneuvers with air cover from the Air Force. The Joint Attack Weapons Test would allow the Army and Air Force to practice working together in coordinated attacks during combat. When Norton arrived on the range, he was surprised to see Clifford L. Alexander, the Secretary of the Army, his hands clasped behind his back, as he observed soldiers and airmen getting into position for the test.
If the Secretary was at Fort Benning, then this test was more important than Norton realized. The test commenced normally at first. The infantry creeped across the field as helicopters approached from their rear. But then, the attack began.
Norton remembered bright green lasers cutting across the dark horizon. There were glowing orbs shooting toward his men from the sky, hitting them and knocking them off their feet.
At first, he tried to rationalize what was happening. Maybe this was part of the test. Maybe these lasers were some sort of non-lethal weapon the Army was testing. But then, as the attack went on, Norton saw a triangle-shaped object appear in the night sky. It hovered above the range, shooting lasers and exploding orbs at the troops below.
This unidentified flying object was unlike any earthly military plane he had ever seen.
Strangely, his memory immediately went blank following this sighting. After the triangle-shaped UFO appeared above the firing range, the next thing Sergeant Norton remembered was waking up in the woods. He could not see anything in the darkness except the odd star glittering through the dense tree canopy. He called out for his team, but his voice was quickly swallowed by the forest.
He was completely alone. Norton stumbled through the woods, disoriented. He had no idea how he had ended up in the forest, and no clue how long he had been away from the Fort Benning grounds.
But somehow, he was headed in the right direction. As he went along, he began to see other soldiers milling around, and soon he had found his way back to the base. Upon looking at a clock, he realized that hours had passed. He was experiencing missing time, just as Vasquez had.
After the alien attack on the firing range, soldiers were becoming sick and disoriented. Upon waking up the next morning, Sergeant Norton was rushed to the infirmary, along with a number of other men in his unit. He could feel sweat beating on his brow, even as the rest of his body was shivering with cold.
All around him were pale-faced soldiers sweating through their uniforms, hunched over buckets as some mysterious disease caused them to purge their stomachs.
All that Norton knew at the time was that a strange ship had appeared in the sky the previous night. Directly after witnessing its arrival, he suddenly found himself waking up in the woods. Since he didn't remember being abducted, he didn't immediately suspect that the source of his symptoms were extraterrestrial in origin.
Like Vasquez, Norton sought out the help of regression therapists and hypnotists later in life. He claimed that his alien abduction memories were much vaguer than Vasquez's, but seemed to remember broad strokes of the event.
Years later, in the 2000s, when Norton eventually obtained his medical records from his time at Fort Benning, he found that he was admitted to the hospital with a temperature of 104 degrees Fahrenheit. He was placed in a steel tub of ice water for 2 days to try to keep his core temperature down.
Norton did remember being debriefed after his recovery. According to Norton, every soldier who witnessed the events on the range was ordered to never disclose any information about the incident. If they were caught talking, they would be court-martialed and sent to the U.S. Penitentiary at Leavenworth, Kansas.
While Norton didn't remember dealing with an Army psychiatrist as Vasquez did, he is very clear on the fact that the Army did not want him or anyone else talking about the attack. But like Vasquez, he also remembered that the initial alien attack on the 14th wasn't the only strange event to occur at the base. A few days after the attack, Norton was overseeing his men as they practiced drills when he noticed two strange-looking military planes flying low over Fort Benning. They stood out due to their complete lack of identifying markings.
He watched as the two planes dipped towards the ground, ostensibly landing at Lawson Army Airfield, just at the edge of the main campus of Fort Benning.
At dinner that night, a rumor was spreading through the mess hall about the strange planes that had landed at the base that day. A soldier told Norton that the planes were whitewashed, meaning they had no numbers or identifications present on their hulls. Usually, Air Force jets display a serial number for identification on the tail of the aircraft.
If the two planes didn't have any identification, that meant they were being used for something extremely top secret.
According to Norton, he witnessed personnel collecting debris from the gun range and loading it into the whitewashed planes. Many years after witnessing this, after he was able to remember the alien abduction again, he surmised the planes were sent from the FBI or military intelligence to collect any evidence of UFOs they could find.
Curious as to what the Air Force wanted with the debris on the range, Norton snuck out of his barracks one night to investigate.
Down on the range, he picked his way gingerly through the destroyed field. The ground was pockmarked by large holes and jagged rocks, and Norton was afraid of misstepping in the low light. If he didn't know better, he would have said it looked like a great storm had torn up the grass.
Suddenly, his foot hit something with a metallic thunk.
Norton reached down to grab the object he had kicked and brought it into the weak moonlight. Sitting in the palm of his hand was what looked like a small, solid chunk of metal.
Looking closer, Norton noticed a set of markings or glyphs carved deep into its surface. The markings looked strange and alien, not resembling any earthly language he was familiar with.
Sergeant James Norton reportedly kept the piece of extraterrestrial metal in his possession for the rest of his life. He claimed that the object was unable to be burned or cut. It could bend, but soon returned to its natural shape.
While he was asked by many publications and radio shows to produce the strange metal piece so others could observe it, Norton failed to ever do so. It's unclear if the alien debris ever actually existed.
Regardless, James Norton's testimony about the alien attack at Fort Benning lends an air of credence to John Vasquez's story.
Much like John, he lost time during the event and didn't remember what had happened upon waking immediately after.
Also like Vasquez, Norton uncovered more memories about his time at Fort Benning while under the influence of hypnosis.
But that's where the similarities end. Because, when closely examined, the two accounts of aliens at Fort Benning differ on key details.
In Vasquez's book, he claims that the first encounter with aliens when the 1,300 troops were abducted occurred on September 1, 1977. While he is somewhat vague about the dates, he describes other alien encounters lasting approximately a week. The last encounter Vasquez reported was on or around September 6th when the aliens attacked the fort and spoke to the general through Vasquez.
However, James Norton claims that the alien activity and abduction happened on September 14th, 1977. He claims that he witnessed an alien attack an entire week after Vasquez said that the alien activity quieted.
There is the possibility that either Vasquez or Norton could be making a mistake in recalling the correct dates. If they are, however, that calls into question everything they have reported. Are there other more significant mistakes in their accounts?
The second significant discrepancy between Norton and Vasquez's stories is the existence of the Jaws test. As mentioned, according to Vasquez's memories, it didn't happen. He didn't recall being briefed on exercises to be performed with the Air Force or being summoned to the range to practice. The Army record of the test, or lack thereof, backs him up.
But James Norton claims that not only was there a Jaws test, but an alien attack happened during it.
The most damning answer to this discrepancy is that one or both of the men is lying about what happened at the base.
Maybe Norton lied to cash in on Vasquez's fame within the UFO community, or maybe Vasquez lied in the first place, and Norton was just piggybacking off this deception.
And so, while a second source claiming aliens at Fort Benning might initially seem like a boon to Vasquez's story, it ultimately casts doubt on the whole thing. It leads us to consider that perhaps neither man's memories were trustworthy.
The concept of repression was first popularized by famed psychoanalyst Sigmund Freud in the late 19th century. According to him, it was a coping mechanism of the brain. The brain buried distressing or traumatic memories so that the memory holder could continue to function. Experts today are still unsure if this is truly the way the brain works in terms of traumatic memories.
Both Norton and Vasquez underwent hypnosis later in life and recovered memories of aliens attacking and abducting them. But the validity of these types of recovered memories has been called into question in recent years.
Psychologist and memory expert Dr. Elizabeth Loftus has studied repressed memories and falsely implanted memories extensively. She came to the forefront of repressed memory research with her Bugs Bunny study, where she was able to successfully implant false memories in the minds of study participants.
And so, even though both Vasquez and Norton had memories of alien abductions, it's entirely possible that both had fabricated false memories during their hypnosis sessions out of a desire to believe. There may have been no alien abductions at Fort Benning whatsoever.
If that is the truth, then the incident at Fort Benning sounds like an open and shut case.
And yet, in 2011, Norton claimed that after revealing his story, he was pursued by men in black suits. And just a few weeks after that, he was found dead. Coming up, we'll have more on this strange turn of events.
And now, back to the story.
In 2000, former Army infantryman John Vasquez published a book detailing his abduction by UFOs while serving at Fort Benning, Georgia in September 1977. In 2011, Command Sergeant Major James Norton added his story to the discussion. And though there are discrepancies in the accounts of both men, Norton's story gained an extra tinge of mystery when he was found dead later that year.
Command Sergeant Major Norton's story has become very significant to the UFO research community, as he was a high-ranking military officer who had spoken openly about alien activity.
After Fort Benning, he continued his service in the Army, working his way up through the ranks. After being stationed at Fort McClellan, Alabama, he began telling stories to the UFO community about extraterrestrial activity at both Fort Benning and Fort McClellan.
In May 2011, Norton gave an interview to The Kevin Smith Show, an alien and supernatural talk radio show. While he had spoken with Kevin Smith before, this time he claimed that the NSA had detained him due to his claims of being abducted by aliens. According to Norton, NSA agents told him to stop speaking about his alien abduction. They informed him he was under special surveillance and threatened his safety if he kept talking.
In November 2011, Kevin Smith posted an update to his show's blog. A few weeks earlier, Command Sergeant Major Norton had been demoted to private and given guard duty at a closed base. On November 13, 2011, he was found unconscious at his post and transported to the hospital. There, Norton was diagnosed with hepatitis C and an advanced stage of cancer. He died in the hospital on November 21, 2011.
This additional information about Norton being threatened by the NSA and demoted to private is only available on one blog, so there is a possibility it may not be fully true.
It also could be possible that his sickness was affecting him, making him paranoid or disoriented. And as always, he may have just simply been making it all up. Regardless, with Norton gone, we may never know the truth.
However, it's also possible that Norton was onto something sinister, even if extraterrestrials weren't involved. The United States military has a long history of performing somewhat extreme experiments on unsuspecting servicemen and women.
Project MKUltra, the secret CIA mind control program, had only ended in 1973, just 4 years before the Fort Benning incident. For 20 years, the CIA performed experiments on thousands of United States and Canadian citizens without their knowledge or consent.
These experiments famously included hypnosis, isolation, sensory deprivation, torture, and the use of psychedelic drugs like LSD to provoke a change in mental state in their unwitting subjects.
Maybe in 1977, the military was once again dosing unaware soldiers. That could explain why only Vasquez and Norton recall seeing an alien attack, even though 1,300 others were present at the fort. It could also explain why Vasquez does not remember a JAWS test actually happening, while Norton does.
If the soldiers were drugged by the Army, CIA, or another branch of American government, then they would be subject to auditory and visual hallucinations. Hallucinogens also affect every person differently, so no two soldiers would experience the same thing.
This could also explain why the Secretary of the Army was present for the JAWS test. He was actually there to observe a much bigger operation, to see how hallucinogens or other experimental drugs affected soldiers and airmen in battle.
Another theory is that the U.S. government was using Fort Benning as ground zero for an experiment with biological weapons.
Following this theory, the Army wasn't trying to cover up an alien attack. They were covering up a massive illegal medical experiment.
From 1932 to 1972, the U.S. Public Health Service knowingly observed African-American syphilis patients at Tuskegee University in Tuskegee, Alabama. During this study, doctors provided the patients, mostly poor sharecroppers from the surrounding Macon County, with placebos rather than the penicillin that would cure them. The Public Health Service claimed the experiment was to study the long-term effects of untreated syphilis on the black male. But by denying these men medical care, they abdicated their ethical duties as medical professionals to treat disease.
The U.S. government only ended the program after whistleblower Peter Buxton brought it to the attention of the American public. Had it remained outside the public eye, it no doubt would have gone on longer.
Could it be possible that something similar happened to the people at Fort Benning? Both Norton and Vasquez reported feeling sick, disoriented, and feverish. Norton even found he had a 104-degree fever in his medical records.
At the same time, the Columbia Ledger Inquirer was reporting on a German measles outbreak at the base. Was the U.S. government or Army using Fort Benning as a testing facility, much like Tuskegee University?
If they were intentionally infecting servicemen with rubella or a similar disease, this could account for some of the fantastic things that Norton and Vasquez saw. Rubella causes fever, and a high fever like the one Norton reported can cause hallucinations or fever dreams.
Vasquez only ever gave a handful of interviews, all to friendly, alien-centric blogs and radio shows. He occasionally admitted in these discussions that he was open to the idea of his memories being the result of a military experiment, rather than a UFO abduction.
Despite its fascinating nature, the scarcity of information on Vasquez's story has led to it remaining on the fringe of the UFO community's radar.
Vasquez unfortunately passed away in 2013 without giving the UFO community any more answers. Much like his life, there is very little information available about his death.
The memory of his abduction had effectively taken over his life in the years before he died. Haunted by partial memories of what happened to him, his quest for the truth was a way of coping with the stress and trauma he experienced at the hands of both the supposed aliens and the military. Examining the available facts to us, we can rate the believability of this particular extraterrestrial sighting on a scale of 1 to 10. Norton and Vasquez both have compelling tales, and they both certainly seemed to believe what they were saying. However, the modern psychiatric community has not come to a consensus on whether repressed memories recovered through hypnosis can be trusted, and such recollections are not permitted as evidence in a court of law.
Even more importantly, there's no physical evidence to support Norton or Vasquez's claims. Norton failed to produce his supposed chunk of alien metal, and though Vasquez dove deep into thousands of government documents to find proof of a cover-up, all he came up with were the two newspaper articles and the report of vaccinations at Fort Benning. But perhaps most suspicious is that, according to Vasquez, 1,300 men were abducted at Fort Benning, and yet only two have ever come forward, and with conflicting stories at that. Vasquez blames brainwashing, but since it wasn't totally effective on him, why wouldn't the same be true of the other soldiers? This actually fits within a common pattern typical of a paranoid delusion.
Oftentimes, paranoia has a narcissistic element that puts the believer at the center of the universe. Vasquez's own story sets him up as a special champion who was the only one capable of communicating with the aliens, and years later, was the only one capable of remembering the ordeal.
But, as stated, the United States government had been caught experimenting on its citizens multiple times leading up to 1977, and so it's not outside the realm of possibility that the men at Fort Benning did experience incredible visions. But these would have been motivated by hallucinogenics or disease, not aliens.
With all of this in mind, we give the incident at Fort Benning a 4 out of 10 on the believability scale. While it seems that something strange happened to these men, the evidence just isn't there to suggest extraterrestrial involvement. Today, Fort Benning, Georgia continues on as a busy military base where thousands of infantrymen undergo training for various specialized jobs in the Army.
While the main campus is full of people, the furthest reaches of the base can feel more secluded and lonely. Soldiers that hike deep into the dense Georgia forest will find that the ground grows thick with soft, dead pine needles, swallowing the sounds of their footsteps.
At night, deep in the woods through the heavy canopy, the men can see bright, piercing stars rise in the sky as the sun sinks behind the tree line. Some nights, when the wind makes the tree branches shudder, it can look like the stars are wandering across the horizon.
As the soldiers watch, maybe one star in particular, a very unassuming star just south of Venus, glows subtly brighter as it passes slowly over Fort Benning.
Thanks for tuning in to Extraterrestrial.
You can find all previous episodes of Extraterrestrial, as well as all of Parcast's other shows, on Spotify and anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Several of you have asked how to help us. If you enjoy the show, the best way to help is to leave a 5-star review.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. We'll see you next time.
Extraterrestrial was created by Max Cutler, is a production of Cutler Media, and is part of the Parcast Network. It's produced by Max and Ron Cutler, with sound design by Michael Langsner. Production assistance by Ron Shapiro and Paul Mahler. Additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Freddie Beckley. Extraterrestrial is written by Molly Quinlan and stars Bill Thomas and Tim Johnson.